Hey, citizens of the interweb, you have landed on A Shot and a Beer, a weekly interview podcast featuring chefs, brewers, troublemakers, and heartbreakers. Every week, we're talking food and booze with people who do it for a living. So grab a beer, pour yourself a shot, and come along for the ride. Well, all right, San Diego, we are at Shot and a Beer. Once again, we are day drinking with a couple great guests. One I don't really know again, so this will be a tour of discovery. And this other bastard I've known probably far too long. Our guests today are, the person I don't know very well is the Baroness of Barbecue. She has created Baron's Barbecue Beat. She's a freelance writer and a food critic, Marcy Baron. How are you, Marcy?
I'm fine today. How are you, Carl?
I'm good. And the gentleman sitting to my left, this gigantic pain in the ass of mine, is a guy that we spent probably 40 hours a week together when we worked at the Handlery together. He is now the director of operations for Morgan Run Country Club, a proud member of the Club Corps family. That unceremoniously booted me to the curve. But he, more importantly, he's also the founder, one of the founders, and runs the Mission Valley Craft Beer and Food Festival, and is one of the founders of Bacon Fest. The inimitable Gus Thompson. How are you, Gusto?
Doing very well, sir. Thanks for having me.
Yum, bacon.
And as always, on the ones and twos, as the kids say, the fabulously talented Matty Bird. How are you, Matty?
Oh, Captain, my Captain. Top notch.
Well, as we always do on this show, for our listening audience, why don't we go through a little bit of history? What got you to the place that you are now? A little bit of your food and beverage history. Marcy, why don't we start with you? You mentioned before the show that you were from L.A. Are you an L.A. native?
I was born in New York, but we moved to L.A. when I was a year and a half old. So I feel like a California L.A. native, yeah.
I would say.
Right? Yeah.
I would say. And how did you first get into the food and beverage world?
Well, I moved down here about 7 years ago and always been a barbecue freak. I just love barbecue. Like, who doesn't love barbecue, right? So, except for vegetarians, but we're not talking about them. So, anyways, I just, watching all the barbecue shows like everybody does on TV and thinking, man, that'd be fun to taste everybody's barbecue and wouldn't it be great to be a judge? And then I kind of saw the opportunity. There was a class being taught down here at the beginning of 2012, and they haven't done one since then. I took a class and became a Kansas City Barbecue Society certified barbecue judge.
KCBS.
Yes.
I am a proud KCBS member.
Get out.
I am.
Right on.
When I lived in Tennessee, we were doing enough barbecue competitions that it made sense to join KCBS.
Now, what do you mean you were doing it as a, were you a competitor?
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
Right on.
Yeah, we would tow my smoker, nicknamed the Big Fat Bastard, we would tow him all over the state. I probably have, 40 competitions under my belt.
Dang.
Yeah, haven't done a single one since I've been out here.
Wow. Well, we got a big one coming up I'll tell you about in a bit. But
okay.
Yeah, and then, you know, every time you tell somebody you're a barbecue judge, the first thing they say is, so where do I go for good barbecue? In San Diego. And then I realized after being... Yeah,
the old answer used to be,
nowhere. You don't, right. Exactly. Well, you know, who knew really at the time that there were over 40 barbecue restaurants in San Diego, and there's probably 6 to 10 new ones just in the last year and a half.
I had no idea that.
I had no idea that number was that high.
Yeah, no, it's clue. Really that high. It's unbelievable. And I realized I got a long road ahead of me to taste all of my... I only started the website in the beginning of December, and my life has just completely changed since the website went live. And at this point, I've only reviewed about 15 restaurants I've been to because, you know, I'd like to say I could eat barbecue every day of the week, but, you know, I just can't do that.
Well, who can?
Yeah, exactly, as much as I love it. So doing that, I have interviews with barbecue celebrities. I've been on a couple of other radio shows. I have a lot of other fun stuff on the website to look at as it grows, but... Since it went live, I mean, I've been asked to write food reviews for can't name the publication yet, but it's coming up very soon, and it's very well known. And you know, I write for the San Diego Reader, but I write news stories for the Reader, and I've written a cover story and things like that. And but I don't write food for them, so we'll be writing food for others. And you know, a lot of great opportunities have come up since the site went up. So yeah, there's a need for it. And to tell you the truth, some of the new restaurants that have opened just in the last year, some of them are excellent. I mean, to the point of, all right, I'm not going to say totally, but competing with some of the Texas places, you know?
Well, you know, the interesting thing to me coming out here was the people, as a barbecue guy from competing in the South, people forget that with carnitas and birria, and there is a whole barbecue culture associated with Mexican food that it's just not called barbecue.
Right.
But, you know, whether it's barbacoa.
Barbacoa, right.
Or, you know, it's just, and it's such an interesting, dichotomy of styles when you get further west, how not only, you know, take away from the regionality of different sauces, but when you get west, the barbecue gets spicier and spicier.
That's
and
true.
I've had tri-tip out here that there would be no way that I would serve in Tennessee.
Right.
Because nobody would like it.
Right, and tri-tip is quintessentially really an American, a Californian thing with Santa Maria style and grilling, and it doesn't have to be smoked. Some people don't realize that, you know, in many regions, as you know, when you say barbecue, they expect it to be low and slow and smoked. But, you know, we grew up in California going, let's go barbecue in the backyard, and it's a grill.
Right.
And there's no smoking. So there's, you know, a little bit of a gray area in between smoking and grilling and all that stuff. Let's just call it barbecue, you know, just, you know, for easy
to say. Well, if you go to the city of Baltimore, there are several places. They have a tradition called pit beef.
Right.
And pit beef is nothing more than a primal cut cooked over an open flame.
Yeah.
And they hack off what's done and they put it back on the flame. And it's barbecue of a sorts, but for the purists, that's grilling.
Right.
And Santa Maria barbecue for the purists is grilling.
Absolutely. You know, and I get a lot of people like, oh, well, you know, Phil's. Phil's is popular. And Phil's is popular. He's about to open his fifth restaurant in the San Diego area. But I try to educate people. There's nothing bad about his meat. It's just not considered traditional barbecue. He doesn't smoke. I guess I heard he used to when he first started.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no smoking going on there. It's all grilled. You know, and people expect me to be a Phil's hater. I'm not. You know, I actually like some of his stuff. I'm not crazy about his sauce, but, you know.
The smoking is what actually led them to leave their first location.
That's what I heard.
The house location in Normal Heights, they were so close to residential housing that they all complained and actually got them kicked out of that first house. And he had to move to the Point Loma location.
No kidding.
So that's what I've heard, too. And, you know, it kind of surprised me because one of the restaurants I'm going to mention that I love now that's only been open about 5 months, and it's outdoor, and it's very Central Texas style, is called Grand Ole, O-L-E, Barbecue, in North Park. And Andy Harris, who runs it, I'm a San Diego native, but has traveled all over Texas and has really learned how to do it. They're smoking there, and they get there at 3:34 in the morning, his pit master, to start smoking. They're very respectful of the neighborhood, try to be quiet and all that. You can't contain the smoke.
No.
But they've been there 5 months, and everybody loves it, and he's right there. I mean, there's houses right next door to his little outdoor place, and he's right around the corner from Thorn Street Brewery and stuff. So he's not having any problem, but
I think that neighborhood is definitely a little more accepting.
Yeah, I guess so.
Of the breweries and the culinary, you know, the culinary restaurants that are down in that area.
Well,
I think they're just a lot more supportive of it.
Bars and restaurants, as much as many of the residents up there don't want more of them to move in, it's part of the North Park culture and has been part of that culture for quite some time now.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Gusto, let's turn our attention to you. I know most of your history, since considering how much time we've spent together. But why don't you tell everybody how you got your start with Carl Strauss?
The Olive Garden was my first restaurant I worked
at. Olive Garden.
My whole opinion of you has changed.
So I was a military kid growing up and came out here to San Diego to go to school. And like everybody else, you basically start working in a restaurant to make your money. Started at the Olive Garden in Grossmont Center. Very first gig, and just, you know, definitely liked it and started bartending and working my way up until I was offered a management job, which I flatly refused. Said, hell no, there's no way I'm doing this. This is not what I want. I was a biology major. And then I did some internships with some companies in the pharmaceutical world and realized that that work is boring as hell.
Mm-hmm.
And the people were boring, and it did not do it for me. So I decided to give it a try and enjoyed myself and kind of haven't left. So I've worked with my first job managing was at Foz, which was a Mediterranean restaurant down on 6th and Broadway.
Is it still around?
It is not. The Courtyard by Marriott is still there, just a different restaurant inside. But did that, Los Coronado Bay Resort, Islands Restaurants, Carl Strauss, onto the Handlery, and now at Morgan Run. So kind of being at Carl Strauss and growing up in Germany, had a very big love and fondness for beer and drinking that... I kind of always say I became a professional drinker. I became a professional drinker at about 14.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa, started early.
Yeah, when you're in Germany, your bars, they don't card. 16 is a legal drinking age, right. But nobody really cares.
Right.
So we had a high school bar, and you could drink. 14 was like being 21 there. So.
Well, and you were in a band in Germany, too, and you were, what, 15, 16 when that started, too, right?
Yes. I was played bass in a ska band and toured around Europe in high school. So that was a boatload of fun as well.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Lots of drinking as well in that.
What was the name of the band?
It was called Loaded.
It says it all, right?
Yeah. It worked. But just had a lot of fun doing that. And, you know, came here and got into the management side of things. But you know, when I found Carl Strauss, it was the first beer I was taken to Carl Strauss when I was working at KPBS when I was at San Diego State, and they took me there for my birthday when I was 18. So imagine all the people who work at KPBS feeding me beers as an 18-year-old because they knew I'd been to Germany to see which ones I liked, and so I'm just sitting here hammering beers down at lunch. But that was the first beer that wasn't a Budweiser. Natty Ice that you get around San Diego State, and it was like, wow, this actually has flavor. This is like what I drank at home. And that kind of introduced me to craft beer here in San Diego. And then when I started working for the company, you kind of see what can be done with craft beer, and the festival scene was kind of getting started. And then I moved to the Handlery, and our first week, you were doing the craft beer event out in the back patio.
On the patio.
We did that the sixth day I was working there, and basically looked at you when it was over and was like, we can do this much bigger in the parking lot. Mm-hmm. We can make this a much bigger deal.
Dust hadn't even settled on the first one before we were planning on the second one.
And that's kind of where it all started. And it started by, you know, my festival producing started just going to different events and not liking what I went to.
Mm-hmm.
Not really enjoying the whole experience or certain aspects of it that could change. And so when we kind of, you know, ran into each other and collaborated, it was like, let's do this right. Let's do it the way we would want to. I always say that I put on events that I want to go to.
Yep.
Was it just logistical things, or was it an overall feel of the event?
A little of both, actually.
Logistics, kind of what you got. When we started this, it was you go to an event and you get your 10 tasters, and there's no food inside at all. And it's just beer. But there was a culinary scene in San Diego that was very underutilized and I'd say a little bit underappreciated, especially as the brewery side of things was really starting to take off. When we started the first MVCBF, there were 38 breweries in San Diego. This year, there are over 120 breweries producing beer here in San Diego.
Yeah,
so
you got to remember, this was grown 7 years ago, right?
Yeah.
So just in 7 years... it's gone up threefold.
It's almost sounding like the barbecue scene in a sense, because I don't know if you guys know, but barbecue is the fastest growing food trend, not just in the USA, but in the world. I was blown away that I just found out 5 American barbecue restaurants just opened in Paris, France, by Parisians.
Mm-hmm.
If that doesn't tell you something about that right there. You know, and then, you know, we're living in the craft beer capital of the world here. So kind of goes hand in hand, beer and barbecue, you know?
It really does.
So it was just real easy to pair those things together. And just looking at the events, it was just, we didn't like the way it was run. We didn't like the fact of the, you know, limited 10 tasters, that food wasn't included. So we paired those two things together to where it was unlimited food and unlimited drinking. And we found by pairing the food with it, it doesn't turn into the bro fest. It doesn't turn into the drunken shit show.
Nice.
Yep. Where it's, I'm just, hey, which one is that is more alcohol? Right. You know, so you go up to so many of these events and festivals, and that's what you hear. Which one's stronger? Give me that one.
Right. Especially if you're only getting to taste 10.
Yeah, well, if it's limited, I'm going to catch my buzz, which, how do I do that? So it's not about the beer. It's not about the food and tasting them together. And the events we put on definitely lend themselves to that.
Well, not to mention, people eat more than they even realize. And it's kind of, you know, it's easy to get hammered and eat that giant burrito and feel like absolute garbage. But when you're getting a little tasting plate from 10 different places, you're eating throughout the day. And nobody really gets, in the history you guys have had to have, in the two that you've done out at Qualcomm, you've had to ask one guy to leave?
We've had to ask one guy to leave, and that's because he wouldn't stop pouring his beers in a glass that he bought from a vendor. And you can't have glass on the field.
The only guy that's ever been asked to leave.
We've not even had to kick out anybody for being too inebriated. It just doesn't happen. So.
Wow, I've only had to kick one guy out of the club this weekend for being too inebriated. So,
well, you know, and the other thing, you were talking about logistics. Gus and I went to an event, and I can't even remember who put it on. And if I remember correctly, I'm not going to name them by name because they do a lot of good. But this whole event, you got out of one line and immediately got into the next line because the lines were that long. Mm. You had to get in line or you weren't getting anything. So what Gus's real strength was in setting these up is that lines don't intersect. And lines were going through lines. Lines don't intersect. You figure out who's going to be your busiest lines. You give them the most room. Who's going to be your busiest food vendor? Places like Slater's and Crazy Burger cook all their food to order, so naturally it takes a little longer. You have to be very cognizant of where you put them. Put bathrooms on both ends of the festival.
You know, the city gives you an equation for how many bathrooms to use, and we basically take that number and double it. Because I don't want to have to wait in line to go to the bathroom. I don't want to have to wait in a very long line to get my food or beer. That's not why I paid my money to go. So we actually limit our ticket sales based on the amount of food that we have to offer. So you're really never going to run in, you know, a line like Slater's or Crazy Burger is going to be 20, 30 people long. Yeah. All the other lines are about 8, 10 people long.
It's true. Every food event I've ever been to, Slater's, and they're at every food event I've ever been to. And I don't think they say no to anybody, and it's always the longest line.
Yep.
So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's that way. I mean, they're frying that egg and cooking that burger to order. It's going to take a while.
Yeah, and you get that nice, like, I think it's like about a quarter or maybe it's a half a burger. So
it's a quarter. It's a quarter.
Quarter, right. And it's, damn, it's good.
Well, and small innovations like someplace to sit down. We were really the first festival to introduce picnic tables, which you can rent. We were looking around. It was at the second or the third one, and people were sitting on curbs and leaning against the wall and just basically sitting wherever they could. And we thought, why don't we give some place to sit? We also kind of broke up the festival so that you have to walk to get to certain vendors. You keep people out of lines by building in travel time.
Right.
So it's some of the, I don't want to say innovations, but it was certainly new to the festival scene. It's just stuff that makes sense. And now it's grown into something that's truly, truly wonderful.
And it's grown into something where we do sell out every year.
That's absolutely.
I know, I wanted to go so bad. And of course, as a new food blogger, in a sense, I wrote you guys.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who I wrote to, but I wrote
you. You wrote to my partner, Robert.
Yeah, yeah, you know. But my website had just gone up, and you guys were very nice. I said, all right, we looked. I had to send you my numbers and all that, and my analytics. And you're smart. That's what you do. And you know what? You guys were nice. You said, okay, your numbers aren't quite where you're at because we do sell out our event. So you were very honest about it. I said, all right, next year, because, you know, my site just got going. So I haven't been yet. Got to go.
Yeah. No, next year, come on down.
Yeah. Def.
Yeah, it's not nearly as much of a killer now that it's not on the parking lot.
That was one of the nice moves about moving it to the practice field at Qualcomm Stadium, is being on a grass surface. So much easier to walk around on, cooler than being on a parking lot. Definitely a much better location to have it at.
Boy, the early days of that, after being there for a couple days with setup and breakdown and all that,
you're just beat up.
Just whooped. You are absolutely whooped.
No, it's a tough endeavor, but it's a fun endeavor. They're fun to put on. I don't have any fun till they're over, but
right,
you know, it's fun for everybody else to go, and well, they're a blast to put on, but they are a ton of work.
It seems like you got it kind of dialed in this year too. You have your setup is less taxing. You have, you know, people monitoring quarters, so you're not doing everything that you used to do.
It's so spread out. We need that help. We have to have that help, or it just won't happen. But we always go the extra step and rent the venue the day before, so it's just set up.
Mm-hmm.
So we set the skeleton, so it's very easy to come in the day of and just worry about getting your vendors in, getting them taken care of and set up. We put as much effort into making sure our vendors have a great time and ease of coming in to set up as we do for the people buying the ticket and coming, because without them, we don't have an event.
Yeah.
So we want to make it as easy as possible for a brewer or a restaurant to come on board. We take care of everything for the restaurant, basically, but the labor and the food.
Mm-hmm.
We give them the tent. We give them all the health department requirements. We pay for their permits. We take care of all that to make it easy for someone to donate their time and product to us.
Yeah.
Because in a restaurant, that's a big deal to take a chef away during the middle part of the day and an assistant and some helpers you're going to leave your restaurant where you're making money to come donate to the charities that we work with.
Yep.
That's a big deal for us, and we want to make sure that's smooth for everybody.
And a lot of the guys I know, me included, had to go back to work that night.
Yeah. No, everybody, you break down, and then you go to your real job.
Yeah.
What a good model to follow. You know, I probably even need to talk to you further about that. I'm helping right now at the Del Mar Racetrack on opening weekend. I'm working with the organizer, Cali Comfort Barbecue, out in Spring Valley, to bring in 10 probably barbecue restaurants for People's Choice Awards. Separate from all the competition teams that are going to come from all over the country, like Carl knows they do. And, you know, I've got a good relationship going with a lot of the restaurants, but I don't put on festivals. I haven't done that before. I'm learning. And even just some of the things you just said right now that you guys are talking about, I could see, all right, you know. Now, I know the guys I'm working with know what they're doing. I'm just working with the restaurants, trying to get them in there. I'm not going to name names, but there was a festival just this past weekend that was a complete debacle. I had nothing to do with it, but I know everything that went on and everything that didn't go on. And, you know, they leave all these bad reviews, which is really bad, for the person that put it on, the promoter, who's about to do another one. But he's on there deleting everybody's bad reviews, you know, and he didn't do anything right. And he had it in a very small venue and promised all these things that weren't there.
Right.
And also advertised vendors that never agreed to be there. So, it really goes deep, you know. So
one of the things we are starting to do is actually kind of via social media, we kind of got tired as promoters, my team, of people coming in from out of town and doing what we call a money grab. I'm going to put this event on. I'm going to sell every single ticket I can via a discount site, a discount website, a Groupon, just to get people in the door. But I don't care about the lines. I don't care if we run out of stuff. I don't care if the bathroom is there or not.
Right.
Because I know San Diego's a beer town, so I'm going to throw this event, take my money, and not really care if anybody has a good time.
So I think that's really what this organizer, and I really call him that lightly. But, yeah, you know, he wasn't thinking any of that. I think he's just looking to grab some money himself.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a local, you know, so you're not going to be able to escape it for too long. But, you know, I don't understand. Go to events like yours. Watch how they do it. See how to do it correctly. And I'm trying to go to as many events as I can to see what is good and what is bad to do at an event. You know?
One of the things that I really do most admire about the Mission Valley Craft Beer Festival is now that you guys are in the position to sell as many tickets as you can, you don't.
No.
You limit the number of tickets based on they have a formula for how many vendors do we have, how many tickets can we sell. You guys could have sold 500, 600, maybe 1,000 more tickets, and you didn't.
And you wouldn't have felt it at the site that day. You could have put 500 more people there, and it wouldn't have been a thing. But we want people to be able to stop and talk to the brewers. Mm-hmm. We want people to be able to stop and talk to the chefs that are there about their food, about their restaurant, and we don't want those lines. So we'll take less money and to have that better experience, because we're not going anywhere. This is year six. We're going to do this for a long time, and I want it to be a good event. I want it to be an event that sells out way ahead of time.
How many people you attracted to this one?
1,750 is
nice.
What we capped it at.
Well,
nice.
the big thing, back when I was in that business with Gus, 3 weeks before the event, I would be
sweating,
wailing,
bullets,
gnashing teeth, tearing my clothes, going, no one's coming to this. It's going to be an abject failure. And he'd be like, San Diego's a last-minute town. Give it time. We'll be fine. And he was always right. But I think the hallmark right now on how well-run your festival is that you pre-sell tickets before the end of the year, and you sell a bunch 4 months ahead of time, mm-hmm. which is, for San Diegans to buy something that far ahead of time, a really rare thing.
This is a very last-minute town. Our beginning events did kind of operate that way, where that over 50% of the ticket sales would come in the last week. With the events with MVCBF and Bacon Fest now, we try to, instead of going on a Groupon or a deal site or just, giving deals out at the end, but charging some people full price at the beginning, we set it kind of on a time tier mm-hmm. where 6 months out from the event is going to be the cheapest ticket that you will ever find.
Yep.
It will be a pretty big, healthy discount. So we know we've got some tickets sold. And we do a limited amount of that, and then it bumps up, and then it bumps up one more final time. And if you are an early adapter, or if you are coming on board early and getting tickets, you're rewarded for that. You're going to pay the cheapest price possible.
But now you got a great rep, too, so you got people returning, I'm sure. That's
very much
like,
so.
All right, here it comes again. I'm going to go buy a ticket. You know?
People are like, when are they going on sale?
Right.
When are they going? Because I just want to get them and make sure I have them.
Right.
I mean, because we get it, kind of like yourself when you shot us those messages, the messages that we get are we get inundated with media, with bloggers. We get inundated with that. It's just we had people we had people asking us if there was a secondary market where people were reselling tickets.
Wow.
Because they wanted them and couldn't get them.
And your partner was so nice to me because when he denied me. And I wrote back. I said, that's cool. He wrote me back and he goes, thank you for being so understanding. I guess he must get people coming back going, oh, screw you. And you didn't give me a book. But I was like, no,
people
you gotta be
suck.
Nice to people.
You get some, and it's worse in the media people. They just expect that, hey, I'm in the media.
Damn,
I'd like to go and send me 2 tickets. And it's like,
oh,
no.
Oh, jeez. I'd never be so presumptuous, but.
Which is why you get polite responses.
I try to be hey, I hate to say it, but it's like I want to I treat people the way I want to be treated, that old saying. It's
that's,
really true, you
that's
know?
The
well,
way
and,
it works
and that actually dovetails with the whole philosophy of the festival,
right?
We always wanted, and fortunately now that I'm out of it, Gus and his partner Robert Esparza have carried that forward. It's not about putting on the festival. It's about the people who are going to the festival.
Sure.
And that completely flips the model, compared to what a lot of people do.
Yeah, I mean, we are trying to make sure everybody has a good time. We get a lot of our vendors. I mean, there's breweries that all I have to do is send, I probably got 30 of the 45 breweries that were coming on the very first email that I sent out. Hey, we're doing the event. It's this day. Would you like to be a part of it? In probably 2 days, I had 30 responses. Yes, we're in. Send me the details later,
yeah,
but we're in.
Yeah, you've
we're,
established yourself.
We want to
already,
be a part
right.
of it. So we get so many vendors and afterwards that are
probably
like,
at least 7 or 8 chefs you have in your back pocket, too, to know to get that started as well.
They just tell us when the next one is, we're there.
Yep.
Slater's come to everyone. Crazy Burger, tell us when the next one is. We're there. What do you want us to bring? You know, it's becoming easier and easier because of the relationships we've been able to build.
Well, not only that, you have chefs that have left their original place, and they're still coming back.
Yes.
Rich from Waypoint. Rich first came to the festival with his R gang.
Mm-hmm.
To Sweeney.
Yep.
Yeah, Rich Sweeney. This guy named Carl Prohaska has been from two different places as well.
Hey, I had to take a break. I was on the dole last year.
Gus, I have to imagine growing up or spending some formative years in Germany that there's like that the Oktoberfest and that has to fit into giving you this vision of what you want this to look like.
A bit. Yeah, it's you're talking a completely different scope and scale. You know, you're talking a tent that holds thousands at Oktoberfest. Mm-hmm. But just the camaraderie and that feeling is definitely something you want to replicate.
Oompa band next year?
Hey, Oompa band gets people
and
moving.
Lederhosen.
Gets
later
people
hosen.
Moving. Hey, those are stiff and uncomfortable. They're actually not. They may look great, but they are stiff and uncomfortable.
The girls look hot in those little whatever those things are.
Yeah, whatever those
yes,
things
they
are.
Yes, they do. Even if you don't have much, those things push it together.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, guys, we are beyond the original 20-minute mark, so thank you.
As I grab my water,
for
sorry.
For being here. Oh, that's okay.
Yeah, not much of a drinker, but I like to watch people drink.
You've come to the right place.
Uh-huh.
Oh, that's tasty.
That is good.
Jameson Caskmates today. So let's go to, now that we have, I have people who I'm kind of dialed in with. Mercy, do you have a favorite style of barbecue?
Well, it's probably going to lean a little bit more towards Kansas City, which tends to be kind of sweet and smoky.
Sweet and smoky, a little more on the tomato-based side.
Yeah, much more so than the vinegary side, which is in several other regions. Now, you know, in trying to really study this whole thing, you start to see a lot of the styles are blending together. And
those division lines are definitely getting blurred.
Totally. In fact, now I've heard, some people are asking, so, like, what's California style? I'm like, we've kind of adapted a lot of them, but it is towards sweet and smoky here, too, that Kansas City style. But one thing I've learned, even though I have always considered myself a very saucy girl, I found out in competition, I mean, as you know, there's not a lot of sauce.
Nope.
On any of the meats.
We used to put it on, and this is a secret, guys, if you want it. To get those really pretty ribs, we'd put them on with a paintbrush.
Yeah, there you go. And I mean, some of the things they do now, I mean, they take the bones out of the thigh meat of the chicken, and then they take the skin off, and they scrape every single piece of fat off that skin, and they put the skin back on the chicken thigh, and it actually stays on there because you have to take that bite, and that skin is not supposed to pull off, or you have to mark them down.
Right.
I think that's just freaking ridiculous. But anyways, I've learned to really love the taste of meat. Without it being drowned in sauce. In fact, I love an article I read once called How to Spot a Fake Barbecue Joint. And that's drowning things in barbecue sauces. They're hiding something. It's overcooked or it's not smoked or something. So as much as I still love sauce and I will probably dip maybe the meat in the sauce, I go for it without it now, you know? I mean,
It was a real eye-opener for me when I went from Nashville, where I really got my start in barbecuing, to down to South Carolina. Mm-hmm. And it's a different ball game down there. I really got to learn to appreciate, and Gus, you can appreciate this too, growing up in Germany. But the vinegary sauces that cut through the fat of that pork, and even some of the regions that do the mustard based sauces.
Oh, I love those.
At the hotel, I'd do a sauce called Carolina Gold, which was based, which was a mustard-based sauce. And wow, you get so used to and so dialed in on a certain style that it's such a departure to just do the vinegary sauces or the mustard-based sauces. And It changes the complexion of the barbecue just completely.
Well, and if you're going to compete, you have to learn what region you're competing in, because those judges in those regions, I mean, obviously judges will still travel from some places, but mostly you're going to have judges that live in the area.
Sure.
You have to please their palates.
Yeah.
And you have to try to cook towards what those judges are sort of expecting. So it's a crazy world, the competition world. It's just
so
nuts.
Carl, what made you want to get into competition barbecue? What made you do that jump?
It was the drinking. Believe it or not.
I am shocked.
We're both shocked, and I don't even hardly know him.
What I loved about it is it's like everything I love about the chef world and the beer world. There's a camaraderie there, and it's competition, but there's a lot of downtime. You know, I with the Big Fat Bastard being a stick burner, I had to start my fire at 10 o'clock. Meat generally went on at midnight, and then every couple hours, I'd have to feed the firebox. But you get there in the afternoon, you rub your meat, you put it in the cooler.
So then you
basically do nothing.
He means 10 p.m. the night before.
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
because you don't realize
how many hours, maybe, especially a brisket, you have to smoke.
You get your meat inspected by the judges to make sure that it's not pre-cooked. You trim it up, you rub it down, you put it in the cooler, then you got nothing to do.
Except drink. So you start drinking.
And he's not even talking yet about what an expensive hobby that is.
Oh.
I'm hearing $1,200 to $1,500 a weekend. And that's not including all your practice cooks.
I always had the benefit of having very understanding employers. And I would always buy my meat through said employers.
Nice.
Which is a
cheater.
But Mercy's absolutely correct. It is an incredibly expensive. It's like owning a boat.
And it's a hobby.
There are very few guys that are really killing it on the barbecue circuit,
making money every
week. And if they are making money, they may be covering expenses, maybe.
How much do you have to produce at a competition?
When I would do a competition, in order to get a box, which is six portions.
Because there's six judges at a table.
Six judges at a table for six portions, and that's six slices of brisket, six pieces of chicken, enough ribs for six people. I would do, generally, we would do 3 to 4 full briskets, 4 pork butts, 12 racks of ribs, and 24 to 36 pieces of chicken.
So usually thighs.
Usually thighs.
Not always.
I did legs once.
Yeah.
And it didn't go over well. But yet you have to, and you do that so you can have especially the weirdness of my smoker. Some of the things, if you put them in the wrong place, they get overcooked. Some of the things get. There's a very small sweet spot in my smoker, so I had to maximize the product to get the right balance of smoke ring, tenderness, not overcooked, because one of the weird things about barbecue is that, you know, everybody talks about fall off the bone tender.
Right, exactly.
Fall off the bone tender in a barbecue competition means you're going home without placing.
You're getting marked down.
Yeah.
But in a restaurant, that's what the customers want.
Exactly.
They want fall off the bone. So that's overcooked.
That's because what we've been told is good barbecue.
Exactly. And you'll see it in every review of a barbecue place. Man, the ribs were fall off the bone. So there's a difference.
So they're overcooked and mushy.
I think so. You know, we are taught to push that meat to the roof of our palate and press it with our tongue. And if it mushes, it's overcooked. Got to mark them down.
The hallmark of a true rib practitioner is that you can take a single rib, bite through it, and see the bite mark where you bit.
It should pull off the bone easily, but not too easily, and then you'll see the bone just dry up real quickly right there. Mm-hmm. It's so specific what we're taught, you know?
Yeah. It's It's an incredibly, I think of myself as a really pretty good chef, and I know all the factors that go into great barbecue. I've only ever been in the top 10, I think, once in one category. There are people out there who are absolutely, and it was another thing that drew me to it is because I knew so little about it. And it's just that continuous quest for knowledge. There are guys who have their smokers dialed in, who have the whole system dialed in, and they put out consistent product each and every week.
But so, that doesn't mean you're going to place.
No, it doesn't.
And it perplexes competitors like you wouldn't believe. I did the exact same goddamn, pardon me, I can cuss, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Goddamn fucking thing I did last time that I took fourth or fifth place and whatever. Yep. And I did the same thing, and I didn't even place in the top 10.
So what's more important, knowledge or equipment?
Oh, boy. You know, your equipment is what gives you consistency. Mine, the Big Fat Bastard, as much as I adore my smoker, as far as it would drive most competition cookers absolutely insane because the temperature swings and it's a hungry bastard. It uses a lot of charcoal, but it's mine and I love it and I know how to cook on it now. But you know, a lot of these smokers are designed to get to a certain temperature, and they don't budge above it. So that takes that factor out of it. But you have to know what you're doing.
I just had an up and coming chef private message me the other day, and he said, "I'm about to put together a barbecue restaurant. It's going to blow all the other barbecue restaurants away." Pretty heady statement, you know, and I first thing I want to be positive, man, that's so great. Now, I don't know the guy, we're just friends on Facebook, I haven't really met him yet, but I kind of know about him, and I said, well, have you gone to any other new places, especially that have just opened recently, that are really good? No, I haven't. Well, okay, to make that statement, and then he said, I know you're going to be working with the Del Mar Barbecue State Championship that's coming up opening weekend of the racetrack. He said, I'd like to compete. I go, okay, do you know anything about competing? No. Can you tell me? I'm like, dude, first of all, do your own freaking homework. I didn't say it that mean.
Is
but
the Del Mar Championship a KCBS?
Okay. Yes, it is a KCBS sanction. It's coming up Sunday, July 17th. And that's the one we're trying to get 10 restaurants for People's Choice Awards.
Still get into that?
Yes. Oh, yeah. We're just beginning to accept competitors and restaurants and everything right now. So talk to me. But anyway, so the guy was just talking
about... Hang on just a second. Yeah, Annette, as you're listening to this, strap it on, baby. We are going back again.
Ooh, strapping it on. Okay. All right, won't go there. nice to hear.
We're going to compete.
So, right. You know,
that
I was like,
to hear.
Do your homework. The guy wanted me to, like, spoon-feed him every... I said, it's much more complicated than you think. It's easy in some ways, but really complicated in others. Yeah. Just him talking about the boxes. How you have... I mean, there's certain garnishes you can put in the box. There's certain garnishes that'll get you completely disqualified. So, you know, from him to... And he wanted me to just, like, privately message him. I said, please just go on. And he got really pissed at me because I wouldn't spoon-feed him every single thing.
Here's something that might strike you both as odd, Maddie and Gus. If there is a hint of sauce pooled in a box, if you over-sauce something and the sauce runs off and it pools anywhere in the box,
disqualified.
Your box can get disqualified.
Yeah. Right.
It's the setting up of the barbecue boxes is something I don't get anywhere near. That is an Annette thing.
There's several websites. One of them is called Turn-In Boxes that people actually put their boxes on there that they might even just be practicing their cooks. And they ask all of us judges to go on there and practice. I mean, of course, we're looking at a picture. It's hard to tell. But people are just mental about it. And you have to be. You can't even. Again, competitors are completely flummoxed, perplexed, flabbergasted why this didn't make a first place. And I'll taste some of these ribs. Of course, I can't talk to the teams before. But when I taste some of their ribs that not in competition or after the competition, I'm so blown away how fucking good they are. And they probably didn't place. I wouldn't know because it is all double blind judging.
Yeah, it's totally blind.
Yeah. But at the end, you know, I'm blown away. Like, I have one friend. He makes the best ribs I think I've ever tasted. he, you know, usually doesn't place in the top 10. Go figure. I don't know. I'm judging the way I'm told to judge. We do each have our own separate palate, of course, but there are some guidelines we have to go by, you know.
Yeah. The only trophy I ever brought home from a barbecue competition was in the anything but category.
Yeah.
And it's a fun category where you do anything but. And so I did a duck, and it was sponsored by a sausage company, so I did a duck and sausage ragu.
Mm.
I mean, I was way ahead of the game in that that particular category, but yeah, I've never, as they say, I've never walked at a barbecue competition.
Got that call. Yeah, you know, and we compete with ribs, chicken, pork, pulled pork. It could be pulled or it could be in medallions and things like that, and brisket. Now, as Carl knows,
medallions
brisket
never
is...
win.
What's that?
Medallions
never win. I don't know. But brisket, man, that's the toughest piece of meat to cook because there's so much, you know, cartilage and everything you have to break down in the meats and stuff, and it's a long cook. You have to smoke it for a long time. It's my least favorite category because I would say almost every competition, there's usually not even one that will blow us away at the table.
Mm-hmm.
And there's usually at least one or two master judges at the table who have at least 30 competitions or more under their belt. And we're very rarely blown away by brisket. It's just, it's frustrating, you know, for the competitors especially, so.
Do you have a, have you drilled it down to having a favorite wood?
You know, first of all, I don't know what a lot of the competitors are using. Again, double blind, so I don't know what they're using. I go more by what the restaurants, you know, every time I review a restaurant, I want to videotape them at the smoker. I ask them all about the woods they use. I think post oak is probably one of my favorites, used in a lot of Texas barbecue cooking.
Mm-hmm.
It's used at Grand Ole Barbecue. I'm trying to remember what Chef Rick uses at Iron Pig Ale House, another fave of mine in PB. I think he's using some kind of oak, red oak, but I don't want to misquote. You know, it's so subtle, and you don't want the smoke to over, you know, power the meat either.
Mm-hmm.
Could I tell the differences? I want to be honest and say I don't know that I could. Say that's pecan, that's apple, that's peach, that's, you know, and there are all those woods being used.
A lot of times, it's actually smelling the smoke will give you a better indication than the meat will.
Right.
When I smoke using only cherry, you can tell.
Right.
Because it smells like a Swisher Sweet. It really does, for those of you who are of an age to remember when people used to do that, but the smoke actually smells like a Swisher Sweet. Apple smoke has a very sweet smoke to it.
Yeah, it does.
Oak has got a very distinctive flavor as well.
Right. And mesquite is the one that I find bitter and don't usually like. Some places use mesquite.
I don't know why so many people think that it's just the wood to smoke with.
Because hickory is the most popular, I believe, from the restaurants I talk to. You know.
I'm a big fan of sugar maple as well.
Well, see, I'm not even really all that familiar with that one.
Oh, sugar maple's nice.
Mm.
It's a very, very mild smoke.
Well, too
but fair. I know one of the most successful barbecue chefs in America is a guy I met, Myron Mixon.
Yeah, Myron. Myron's a character. They were just
Myron's a...
They were just here filming a commercial just a couple weeks ago.
Myron's something.
But
Myron uses a lot of peach.
Yeah.
Being from Georgia.
Right.
But, and Myron breaks a lot of the rules too. Myron, and I don't mean he doesn't break the rules in competition. He breaks what we all think are the quote unquote barbecue rules.
Right.
Myron cooks a lot hotter than everybody. Myron cooks a lot faster than everybody. The low and slow. And he's hugely successful at it. He's really, really good.
That's why he teaches all those classes. My friend's a cop here in San Diego, and he's got a team. And he went all the way out there to take Myron's class, I believe, in Georgia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, going back to something you said earlier, Gus, I want to touch a little bit on the beer side of this. Why Carl Strauss and the restaurants and the beers and all that, in my opinion, don't get nearly enough credit for what they did for not only the craft beer scene, but just for craft beer in San Diego. Would you agree with that?
Yes. They started out, Carl Strauss started out with a philosophy, and especially when they started, they had a very hard job of being the first one to break in and do it. they started out trying to make, his philosophy was to make beers to introduce people to craft beer and the other flavors. So he specifically brewed his beers and his recipes to make them very approachable. They wanted to convert, they wanted to convert the bud drinker to craft beer.
Okay.
So then you had Stone come out, you had Pizza Port come out that went more extreme with their flavors and more experimental.
Right.
But they stayed for probably too long with that philosophy of making very palatable beers, very easy to make
So they were basically the one that got bloody running through the wall, and the market kind of passed them by.
For a point.
Yeah,
they're coming back around. The way Paul Segura is brewing right now, they've given him a lot more latitude to get creative with the specials.
Well, that's good.
But their core beers are still that very easy approachable drinking beers.
Well, not being a guy that loves the giant hoppy San Diego beers, a lot of Carl Strauss's beers are right in my wheelhouse. I to this day I love Red Trolley.
That's what they were shooting for.
Red Trolley is a very, very good food beer.
That's an awesome food beer.
And it's a very easy to drink beer.
That is the beer that they make beer floats with at the restaurant.
Oh, is it really?
I still want to try a beer float. That sounds so good.
What's a beer float?
You take some ice cream, put it in a glass, you put in some chocolate, you put in some chocolate sauce, some caramel sauce, and fill it up with
Sweet
Red Trolley.
Sweet and savory, man. Sweet and savory.
Ruined perfectly good ice cream.
Oh, no.
Beer. Oh,
and so many people have that thought until you have one. And you're like, people eat it and they have this look on their face like, oh, this is going to be horrible. It's going to be horrible. Oh, my God, that was really good.
Kind of like the mellow float.
Yeah, kind of like the mellow float. We started using this. We did a handful of beer dinners at the Hanlery. And kind of as a palate cleanser, we would do a Hefeweizen with a lemon sorbet in the beer. Very light, very fruity, very cold. It kind of completely cleanses the palate right before you go on to kind of a nice hearty course.
It's a great intermezzo. Great intermezzo.
Got to give it a
but,
shot.
But, you know, I just think that Carl Strauss, it became kind of almost like Gordon Biersch, but people forget that Carl Strauss really started it all here. Gordon Biersch was a national company that moved here.
89. They started in 89. They opened up downtown in, I think it was February of 89.
Is that the one by the Hall of Justice? Was that the first?
Kind of down there, yeah. That was definitely the first one. But, I mean, that started it. They were the first brewery in San Diego since Prohibition.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
They were the ones that started it all.
Didn't
I mean,
that.
Your Stone didn't come until quite a few years later.
I just think it's the landscape is of the craft brewing world is interesting because I think we're starting to see, I don't want to say a collapse of the bubble, but we are now experiencing closures. And not just closures of places that everybody assumed were going to close anyway, but closes of places that had won awards. And closes the places that seemingly were doing really, really well.
Well, now I think you're seeing things that are more along the lines of how to run a business than the quality of their products. Mm. Some of the places that are closed, like you're telling, they've won awards. They've gone to the GA, the Great American Beer Festival, and won medals, mm-hmm. but still end up closing. So some of that is more the business side of it, really, than it is. The market's too saturated, there's not enough tap handles, or, you know, it's just a bad product.
Yeah.
And we have so many opening up in OB where I live, it's just unreal. In fact, we have tasting rooms opening everywhere because, mm-hmm. you know, I just learned that they don't have to have full liquor licenses or for a tasting room. And we've got three new ones and two just opened recently. I mean, it's just insane. You know? Mm-hmm.
If you have a brewery license, you can open up 6 satellite tasting rooms.
Whoa, I didn't know there was. I didn't know 6 was the number.
So 6 is the final that you can do under 1 liquor license. So they can branch out that much.
Yeah.
So, you know, Stone's got the one downtown. They had one in North Park.
Right.
That they ended up closing. But you can put them around under still the 1 liquor license.
It'll be starting to look like PB. It's just insane.
it's, you know, the market, it's still, you know, the market is still bearing out. You know, we're still not, you know, you go look in PB. I use PB because it's a great example. There could not be a place that is more suited to the Shock Top, Budweiser, right. Bud Light. That's what people are looking for and going down there. And you go down there now, you've got Iron Pick Ale House.
Right.
You know, you had Manzanita's Tasting Room down there. You've got PB Ale House, the Tap Room. You go into a place like the Tavern at the beach, it's now mostly craft beer. There's still a handful of taps dedicated to, you know, the Buds, the Bud Lights. Mm-hmm. But it's mostly now craft. And, you know, every restaurant I now run, if I have to come in and there's, you know, kind of the big domestics on the taps, they're gone. Wow. And local craft beer comes on. You know, I'll serve Bud in the bottle. I'll serve Bud Light in the bottle or Coors Light, but you don't get tap space.
It doesn't taste any different in the bottle than it does come out of the tap.
It's designed to not taste different. So why should I have one over the other? There's no difference in flavor. There's no difference in quality, and they actively push that. So why would I shortchange a local brewer to put them on? People are still going to come in and ask for it, and I got you in the bottle. But that tap space is dedicated specifically to San Diego craft beer. There's too much good here. There's just too much variety to not give them that option.
Right.
Well, okay, guys. We have hit about the hour mark, and we don't generally like to go too far over that. I think the world is becoming an ADHD kind of thing, and we can only keep people's attention for so long. Why don't we kind of wrap this up with Mercy? Where can we find you? Give us the info on your website. Give us the info on any events that you have coming up. Because I know the one that you mentioned earlier, I'm very interested about.
Sure. Well, my website is Barron's with one R, Barron. Barron's Barbecue Beat, BBQ, beat.com, because I'm also a drummer. So you'll see a picture of me on there playing drums. Instead of in my hands of drumsticks, I've got ribs in my hand. So, and then, you know, I'm on Instagram and Facebook with those names. And what else am I on? All the social media sites. Of course, you can grab those on the first page of my website. That's basically the place to find me. I'll talk to anybody at any time about barbecue. I could go on and on and on ad nauseum. So if you want to talk to me, do that. And then the big competition we have coming up that you'll be interested in, that everybody will be interested in, is the weekend, the opening weekend of the Del Mar Racetrack. We are doing our competition on Sunday. It's called the Del Mar Barbecue State Championship. So we are expecting, we're hoping, what's the last count? I don't know. We're hoping anywhere between 50 and 70 teams, which means we'll have at least that many barbecue judges. They're coming in from all over. Sunday, they expect 30,000 people at the racetrack, not including what we attract to the event itself. I think the price of getting into the racetrack gets you into the barbecue competition area. We're hoping to have some music and, again, all the People's Choice Awards from local restaurants. Not necessarily barbecue, but they have to serve one of the four barbecue meats. And it should be a really fun event. If you have any questions about it, anybody, just give me a holler online. I'll get back to you.
And Mr. Thompson?
And for me, the next thing I really have coming up is San Diego Bacon Fest, which is going to be at Liberty Station on September 3rd. So same spot it's been at, that is going to be a fun event. So you can find tickets at www.sdbaconfest.com. Then I'm also, you can find me at the Mission Valley Craft Beer and Food Festival site, which is mvcbf.com.
What's the rundown looking like for Bacon Fest this year? How many brewers, how many food vendors, how many, do you have those numbers yet?
Not yet. We are looking at probably between 25 to 30 different eateries and the breweries, because we go for wineries, distilleries, and breweries.
Mm-hmm.
So all beverages should probably be between about 50 to 60 different venues.
Wow, that's spectacular. How many tickets you're going to sell this year?
Depends on how many eateries we get. We don't know that ticket level until we really hammer down exactly who's coming with how much food, and then we limit ticket sales based on that.
Okay.
So I would assume
for people who don't know, everything's got bacon in it.
It's probably about 25 to 30 different restaurants. They have to bring a bacon dish. So there'll be different bacon vendors there, selling different T-shirts, things like that. And, you know, three live bands playing. You will not be able to eat everything, and you will not be able to drink everything.
I'll take that challenge.
Some people have tried, and they've gotten hurt. Okay. Bob Brasher hurt himself.
Peter still hang out?
You know what? They protested with about 15 people at our first one. And, you know, the funniest story I love to tell is there was a very small girl, probably less than 100 pounds, came walking by the protesters, and the protester looked at her with her sign and was like, "Meat's murder." And she just looked at her and went, "Tasty murder."
That's right.
And just walked right into the event.
Love it.
So we get people that take pictures with them, and the first year it was probably 10 to 15 people. Mm-hmm. The second year was
first
like
year,
five
were,
people.
They were right behind my tent.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
and now I doubt they'll even show up.
Yeah.
People, you know, eating tasty animals, right? That's what it should stand for.
I think they now understand they're not really going to change hearts and minds at a bacon event.
Right.
Right, exactly.
It's kind of the wrong venue.
And Maddie?
Let's see. I have no bacon events coming up. I have a comedy cluster coming up in May with Alex Hooper's headlining. So it'll be night, the first Monday of May, I believe it is. Alex Hooper is an amazingly funny comedian from L.A. He was just here for the weekend showcase.
Alex Hooper's nuts.
He's out of his mind and fantastically funny. And I'm looking forward to being on that show. And then also I wanted to, if anybody's looking for something to do on a Monday night and are bored at home, I highly recommend to logging on to Chip Nicholson's Periscope account. Chip was a guest on our show a couple of weeks ago. He broadcasts the open mic. We have the Periscope mic every Monday night here, and you can watch.
That's the website, Periscope.
Yes.
The website.
Periscope and mic.
I just got on that. It's so weird.
Absolutely. You can see it every Monday, and you can see all the different open micers trying their bits, and Miles Michaels fighting the open or the Periscopers. And it's a good time. It reminds me kind of the roast battle a little bit in L.A. So.
Oh, and the comments that people make are
horrible.
Brutal.
Garbage people.
Garbage people.
Garbage people. You put them online. You give them give the anonymity. And they
garbage
they,
people online? Hey,
absolutely.
I'm trolls? No.
So, but you can find me on the Twitters at J Matthew Bird and on Instagram at Matthew_Bird, BYRD.
Okay. Matthew is also a very talented engineer. He makes this show sound as good as it is, and he's a photographer, if anybody is looking for that. As always, you can find me here at Shot in a Beer Pod on Pod or Podcast?
Pod.
Shot in a Beer Pod on Twitter. I'm really no good at this. I don't even know my phone fucking Twitter handle.
You're sharp. You got it.
Yeah, Shot in a Beer Pod on Twitter. Shot in a Beer Podcast Shot in a Beer on Facebook. If you want to, you can search for it. You can find it there, or you can just type in Drinks with Chefs. That should come up. My own Facebook page is Carl Prohaska. I'm Drinking Less and Other Lies, and you can find all my comedy stuff there. And come see me every weekend. I'm cooking here at the Madhouse. So thank you guys. This has been a really fun episode.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Cheers to the final.
So I raise my water
Cheers.
Bottle again.
You raise your water bottle again. Thanks again, guys, and Shot in a Beer's out of here.
Last night I dreamt of flying over hillsides in the snow, and I dove down through the clouds to the valley there below. When the fields turned into parking lots, my freedom turned to dread. The ground rose up to greet me, and I jumped up out of bed. You can fly, fly, fly off to anywhere you choose. You can try, 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 but eventually you'll lose. It seems there's always something trying to bring a good man down.
no fear of falling, but I hate it in the ground. I'm searching through my soul for trying to find some extra change. I thought that I knew everything till everything changed. Now I'm standing on an island that is singing into the sea, and all that I can do is just enjoy the scenery. Well, you can fly, fly, fly off to anywhere you choose. You can try, 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 but eventually you're through. They say I'm many sweet soft music just before.
Thank you for listening to A Modern Profession Podcast. For more podcasts you might enjoy and information on live shows and how you can get involved, visit amodernprofession.com or check us out on Twitter @AModernPro or on Instagram @AModernProfession. Thank you.